Hello and welcome to Greenish, the only podcast that discusses what money and kale have in common. From money and kale to mindfulness and capital, our mission is to discuss this intersection while speaking to the entrepreneurs that fuse both. Today, we're here with Carla Oates, the founder of The Beauty Chef. Carla, we are so excited to have you today. Our first season is called From the Inside Out, and we're focusing on women spearheading the philosophy that beauty begins inside. Whether it's healing our hearts or our minds or our microbiome, this then radiates outward. The pioneering of this philosophy, Carla Oates, author of Feeding Your Skin and named the skincare innovator by Net-a-Porter. Carla created The Beauty Chef in 2009 after healing her family's skin issues and discovering that beautiful, radiant skin begins with a healthy gut. She began experimenting with lacto-fermenting superfoods in her Bondi kitchen, and that is how Glow, The Beauty Chef's first inner beauty powder, was created. Fast forward to just 3 days ago when the Beauty Chef team launched Clarify. With so much excitement around the Beauty Chef right now, we are so excited to be speaking with Carla today.
Thank you so much, Kate. What an introduction. Thank you.
So we would love to start from the beginning. And in the Greenish spirit, this is your roots. So tell us about your roots, your background, your childhood. What did this look like for you?
So I guess we've only got an hour, Kate. I could talk about, you know, my childhood and the journey to the Beauty Chef for hours, but I'll stick with the most sort of relevant points. I guess really, you know, growing up with eczema and allergies and compromised health when I was a child and teenager. And in my teenage years, you know, around 12 to 13, which really kind of your tween years, and having such bad eczema all over my arms and my legs to the point where, you know, they would weep and they would bleed and I was on cortisone creams. And my mum, who was quite alternative, she took me to see a naturopath. And so I guess in those days, naturopaths were very much on the fringe. It wasn't something that like nowadays was mainstream. And she took me to see a naturopath who did a whole lot of blood tests and said that I had allergies to certain foods like gluten intolerant, and quite a severe allergy to dairy and some other foods as well. And so from quite a young age, I learned through my own experience, you know, that food is medicine and this incredible connection between what we put into our bodies and our skin health and the way we feel. And so this naturopath was amazing. She eliminated certain foods from my diet, introduced other foods and supplements, and I saw such a difference in my skin and I felt better. And I could just see the direct correlation. And so fast forward years later, when I was working as a beauty editor for a newspaper, and so I was a fashion stylist and a writer, always really interested in helping people through education and health. So that's something that was a real interest of mine in some of my writing on the side. And I started studying naturopathy in my 20s, but I did end up having two children in my early 20s and also working full time. And then I decided to stop my naturopathy degree and focus on children, raising kids and work. And, you know, I landed a job as a beauty editor for a mainstream newspaper. And I was so excited at first. I was thinking this is going to be such an amazing job and I get to work with all these amazing products. And being into health and a bit of a natural researcher, I started looking at the ingredients in skincare products. And as I was a columnist for one of the main newspapers in Australia, I had women and men from all over the country writing in and saying, Carla, what would you suggest for my psoriasis and my eczema and my aging skin and my child's got acne? And I was looking at these ingredients, honestly, Kate, and I'm thinking, these ingredients are so bad. You know, they are, you know, possible tetragens, neurotoxins, carcinogens. I know they're in tiny, tiny amounts. And, you know, I'm not saying that they cause disease, But they definitely, if you're surrounded in your personal care products, your skincare products, your diet with a whole lot of toxins, it's the accumulation that can be really compromising to our health. And when you talk about actually healing skin conditions, I'm looking at all these ingredients in mass skincare products and going, I can't recommend these products to my audience. And so I thought I really want to help change the paradigm in the beauty industry. I think it was really unhealthy back then. I mean, this is over, you know, this is over 20 years ago now. And, you know, there was a very, you know, people didn't really think about beauty from within. And from my own experience with eczema, I knew that skincare and having glowing and healthy skin was an inside out job. So I quit the newspaper and I decided that I really wanted to help shift the paradigm in the beauty industry and focus my attentions on educating people on the benefits of looking after your skin from within and also plant-based and natural topical skincare. So I quit the newspaper. I became a columnist for the newspaper for a column called Do It Yourself Beauty, where I just spoke to people about how to look after their skin and well-being naturally. I became a beauty editor for Wellbeing magazine for about 15 years, and I also became the ambassador for the Biological Farmers of Australia in organic skincare, as well as Australian Organic, which is a certifying body. And wrote thousands of articles for different publications on the benefits of looking after your skin from within. And then my daughter, who's now nearly 25, but when she was 10, she started getting some eczema and allergies. And I guess there's a real predisposition in our family. So my husband also gets eczema. So genetically, she's sort of got that predisposition. And I'm a big believer that you can have a genetic predisposition to something like I do with eczema. But since I've looked after my gut health and been very conscious about what I eat in my lifestyle, I don't have eczema. But if I'm not conscious about my gut health, it does, you know, I've had a few times where it started, I can feel it flaring up. And then it's an indication and a sign in my body saying to me that I need to slow down or I need to reassess what I'm doing with my diet or lifestyle. So I'm such a big believer that you can environment and the choices you make with your diet and lifestyle can stop some of these things that you're predisposed to from, you know, manifesting too extremely or sometimes manifesting at all. And so my daughter showed these signs of, you know, eczema and allergy. And so I kind of put her on a bit of a diet that I had, you know, engaged when I was younger, which was gluten, dairy free, no corn, no soy. And of course, when you're at that age, you know, she was going to friends' houses and having some, you know, she was having some, you know, processed foods and sugary foods at her friends' houses. And when kids get to a certain age, it's very hard to control what they eat at school with their friends when they're not at home. And so, which is very frustrating. And so I also stumbled across some research at that time that looked at the connection between certain types of gut bacteria and allergies and eczema. And so I decided to put my family on a gut healing protocol, which included, you know, removing these sort of gut compromising foods like gluten and dairy and introducing lacto-fermented probiotic rich foods. So, you know, like your time honored foods that have been around for centuries in different cultures and are really aligned with health giving benefits. So you've got sauerkraut in Eastern Europe and kefir, and then kimchi, although my kids didn't like kimchi because it was too spicy from, you know, a Korean superfood, and also kombucha. And so I introduced all of these foods and I started making all of these lacto-fermented veggies and concoctions. And I noticed such a big difference in my daughter's skin and well-being, and also not just her skin and her allergies, but also her focus at school really improved when I started looking at her gut health. And then my skin was really like amazingly glowy. And people were like, what are you doing differently? Your skin's amazing. And I said, all I'm doing is eating these probiotic rich foods. And so I literally had my friends and families and neighbors like coming over going, well, can we have some of the bacteria that's growing in your kitchen? So I had all these jars of things growing and it looked very strange. And from there, you know, I had friends and family saying that their tummies felt better, their skin was better, their nails were stronger, they felt more energized. And from there, I created in 2009 our Glow Inner Beauty Powder, which is still our hero product in the range. And you know, you can imagine back then, people were like, this is so weird. You've got like a powder for skin that you take. And so ingestible beauty wasn't a thing back then. And also, and it's full of bacteria and it's fermented. And they're like, oh my God, Carla, this is so weird. And it's so left of field. But, you know, Kate, I felt so passionate. I'd seen the results. I knew that this was one day going to be a big movement because it made sense. The research was there and I'd seen it firsthand, the benefits that fermented foods and probiotic foods brought to people's well-being. So that was exciting. So I launched Glow and I had no platform. I had $3,000 and people thought I was crazy. They're like, what are you doing? I'm like, this is, and I've just believed in it. I've been unwavering to this day. And I love the fact that gut health has become mainstream. And it's so funny, Kate, while it's a little bit annoying, you know, there's so many Glow powders on the market now, like ingestible powders called Glow. And of course they don't have the ingredients that we do. And that's frustrating because if people are going to invest money, I want to make sure that they are getting value for their money and that they're also understanding what they're putting into their bodies. And so, but I'm really happy that there's been a paradigm shift and that people are, you know, wellness is beauty, beauty is wellness, and that people are embracing their gut health and understanding how absolutely pivotal it is, not just for your skin health, but for your mental health, for your metabolic health, and for your immune health as well.
I love how you say that your mom took you to a naturopath when you were little. I definitely relate to that. I always say, I think my mom was dropping me off at the naturopath before she was dropping me off at kindergarten. And I had no idea what was going on. But being raised with that root cause, like food is medicine mentality, is such a gift. And also with what you're talking about, with so much beginning in the gut, I think another thing that begins in the gut is empowerment. We always say like, oh, I'm genetically predisposed to acne, or I'm genetically predisposed to depression. But looking inward, like we know, like 90% of serotonin begins in the gut. And we really want our listeners to understand that looking at the gut is a way to see what's going on in your body. It gives you a baseline for your health. It gives you a baseline for digestion and even anxiety. I think that's why they say like gut feeling or gut instinct, like everything really does begin there. And it's empowering to know that you can look inward and you can take control of that. And you're not just subject to a diagnosis or something that a doctor tells you, but you can really discover that and look inward and figure out what's going on in your body. And a good place to start is the gut.
Honestly, and I've been working with some amazing people like, you know, Professor Felice Jacka from the Food and Mood Centre at Deakin University in Victoria in Australia. And she's done incredible work and research and got amazing studies on the connection between diet, the gut microbiome, and mental health. So I understand that, you know, mental health, for example, is often not, it's not simple. There are so many factors that can contribute to, you know, imbalance with mental health. However, you know, the gut plays such a huge role, and inflammation in the body and inflammation in the brain, huge role, and diet and lifestyle are big contributing factors. So yes, you've got genetics, and yes, you've got environment, and all the other things that can contribute to people having mental health issues. But I would love, and it is a holistic approach. So, you know, when, with people, they've got mental health issues and they write into us and our customers, I always say to them, you know, there's great studies on cognitive behavioral therapy, and that is something that's important to talk to someone and get that counseling. But also it's so important to look at your biology and look at your methylation, for example, your biochemistry, and also your gut health, because 95% of your feel-good hormone serotonin is produced in your gut. GABA is produced in your gut, which is a calming neurotransmitter. You know, there is a really strong gut-brain axis and information highway between the gut and the brain that helps, you know, influence our mood and the way that we feel. So one of my big missions is to help educate people around gut health and mental health, because we talk a lot about gut health and skin health, but I try in podcasts and also in my book, The Gut Guide, which came out the year before last. We have an introduction also with another microbiologist and professor who I've worked with, Dr. Andrew Holmes, who is at Sydney University at the Charles Perkins Centre, who's doing a lot of research into gut health, diet, the microbiome and human health. So there's going to be more and more coming out about this. And it's also empowering for people because while, yes, you know, we inherit things genetically, and some things are harder to shift than others. But, you know, I'm a big believer in epigenetics, you know, in genetics load the gun and environment pulls the trigger. So how can we, through lifestyle diet, you know, we have 150 times the microbial genes than we do have human genes. So our gut microbiome plays a huge part in our health and the way I think that genes can probably be switched on and switched off. So I think that, you know, this is a field of research that I think is really interesting. And people often ask me, well, what can I do for my gut health? And it's like diet and lifestyle. So my book, The Gut Guide, is actually available in the States and off our website. And it's a really great informational resource to really explain. And I try to keep it as simple as possible, but it is a little bit like a textbook. But then you have really delicious recipes following, but just explains the absolute profound impact gut health can have on everything in our lives. And your relationship with your gut microbiome probably is the most important relationship that you'll ever have in your life because it influences so much.
Yes, I am so passionate about the correlation between mental health and the gut. I remember when I was younger going to the doctor and saying like I was having depression and anxiety and my mom saying like, but that's not what it is. You have to dig deeper. It's your body trying to tell you something. And so we did, and it was actually caused by extremely low serotonin and also very low mitochondrial efficiency. And right when I got to that root cause and got the solutions for those root cause issues, everything was so much better. And I think that goes back to the empowerment piece of like, you're not subject, like whether it's, you know, digestion issues coming from the gut or something like anxiety, like there's always an answer. And I think that that should just give you so much hope and so much joy, like in anything that you're experiencing in your body. And I'd love to talk about the business piece, but before we get into that, I want to know, how do you define beauty?
So I think beauty is so broad, and I think it's what makes you feel most comfortable and empowered and beautiful in your own skin. So I think it is so subjective. And that's something as well that I feel really strongly about. And I'm so happy to see the paradigm shift, not only in people viewing, like seeking out clean beauty and looking at beauty from within, but this great shift that we've had in terms of embracing the individual and our own beauty and diversity as opposed to a very prescriptive view of beauty, which I think, you know, 20 years ago in the beauty industry, it was so prescriptive and I found it so frustrating. I love that, you know, people are embracing models that look, you know, that are just unique and celebrating their individuality, you know, like they're sort of women of all different shapes and sizes. And, you know, even, you know, I think 20 years ago, it was very, as I said, very prescriptive. And now it's almost like we're embracing models that have beautiful big features and different features and are unique and individual, which I absolutely love.
And you were so ahead of the curve in creating this. Like natural beauty was really at its infancy, and you created like an entire genre within the industry. So what was the moment that you realized that this was a business? It wasn't just you sharing the solution with others, but that you were ready to turn it into something more.
So I guess it was probably right from the beginning when I built a website. I had $3,000 in the bank and everyone was telling me not to do it. I'm very determined. I'm a very determined person. And when I really believe in something, I really believe in it. But I had incredible support from my husband and my mum and a few friends who were like, this is amazing and go for it. And, you know, super, super supportive. So I just kind of, I didn't ever question it. I sort of just put my head down, and I was working at the time freelance writing and also doing a little bit of freelance starting as well. And I just kept chipping away at it. And then a home shopping channel, because there was no category. So there was no ingestible category. There was no wellness category. And I remember I had a buyer from Farmers in New Zealand, which is a chain of department stores, call me and said, look, I saw your product in Vogue. I bought it from your website. It's so amazing. People are saying my skin's incredible. She said, I'm so frustrated, Carla. I can't put it in Farmers. She said, because there's no category for it. There's no shelves to put it on. She said, you're way ahead of your time. And, you know, so it was really a couple of years, Kate, that I sort of plugged away at it. And then I had an agent, who's still my agent 10 years later, at TVSN, which is a home shopping channel like QVC in Australia. And he said, I've heard about your magic purple powder. He said, would you be keen to sell it on TV? And so I did. I got on TV and I educated the customer. And it's still, like, now 10 years later, they're the best-selling product on home shopping. And so when I saw that it really resonated with people and people were getting such incredible results, I was like, okay, this is a thing. And I was so busy. And then Selfridges in the UK approached me and Cat Beauty in New York approached me. And I had all of these amazing retailers suddenly go, we are going to launch wellness and ingestible beauty on our shelves and you're the pioneer and we have to have the beauty chef. And so that's when I was like, oh my gosh, I was still working from home. I was doing TVSN. I was, you know, fielding all of the phone calls, doing everything. And I was like, okay, I need some employees. I need to hire someone to help me. And then I hired PR and I hired a part-time marketing and sales manager. And then it's just, it's grown from there.
That's incredible. And when you were on TV, I know you've said in the past that you didn't love being in front of the camera at first.
No, I didn't.
Did that change over time?
It has. And I definitely, because I'm so passionate about what I do, I just focus on what I'm saying and try not to worry. Like, you know, because I am naturally a little bit shy and people don't realize that because they think, well, you always do TV, do lots of media and interviews, but that's not my comfort zone. My comfort zone is definitely creating and being creating products and creating content. That is probably my absolute comfort zone. But I understand the importance of being a spokesperson for the brand and getting that important education out there. So when I change it, the way I think about it, I don't get as nervous. But when I did TV, it was terrible. My lips were shaking and I could hardly speak. That was awful. And it's really good because I tell people that, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs take solace in that and they go, I just can't do what you do because I'm so nervous. And it's like, but I was like that too. This has taken time for me to get more confident in speaking and being a spokesperson for the brand.
That's such a huge lesson. And I feel like when you come from a point of gratitude, you can really do anything. And like you're saying, you saw every chance as an opportunity. Like maybe it's an opportunity to advance your business, or maybe it's just an opportunity to learn. And I feel like the opposite of gratitude is ego, like thinking, oh, I'm too good, or I know too much to be a beginner or to ask questions, or even being in a position of like being nervous. I feel like that's something that so many people, and even I, like, I hate putting myself in a position where I feel like nervous because you feel vulnerable, but it's hard to learn without putting yourself in a vulnerable position. One of my favorite quotes is by like the tennis legend, Billie Jean King, and it's pressure is a privilege. And Serena Williams said that she always reflects on that when she's training. And it's like the opportunity to miss 9 shots, even if you make the 10th. The opportunity to ask questions. I think that's so important. So I'm curious, what would you tell listeners, whether it's in studies, in their first jobs, or in doing something entrepreneurial, how to take their ego out of the question and shift towards gratitude?
I love that quote. I think by Billie Jean King, I think it's such an incredible quote. And I completely agree about, you know, I often, things that I'm nervous about, I turn it around and go, wow, what a great opportunity. And exposing myself to my fears is going to make me stronger and learn more. And that's when you really learn. So it really is turning it around. And also, what's the worst thing that can happen? Like, you just get really nervous and you shake. And I think that's endearing. Like, when people come for job interviews at the Beauty Chef, and sometimes people are nervous. And, you know, when the interview, they'll go, I'm so sorry, I'm so nervous. And I'm like, I love that, because it shows that you care. And
that's so true.
And that for me is really beautiful and really endearing. So please, like, I don't see that. I see that as a strength, to show vulnerability and to be able to have that, that gratitude and that sensitivity and that openness is a really beautiful thing. And so, yeah, gratitude is incredibly important. And ego is something that, you know, it's not a dirty word, and we all have ego. And I think ego can help us in certain situations, but I think it's very important to do self-checks and always think about, why am I doing this? And, you know, it is about the journey and enjoying the journey. And for me, always, even when the business has grown to the size it has, and I have those moments where I sit with myself and I'm like, and sometimes I have to be very focused on the business, and my creativity or my right brain gets sort of ignored, or I'm, you know, underutilized, and my comfort zone is more in my right brain than my left zone. But running a business and being the CEO, I have to go into my left brain. And sometimes when I'm too in my left brain, I go, what am I? I'm being driven by something that's, you know, around growth and what everyone, like, other people expect of me, like our investors. Or, and I sit with myself and I go, no, this is this brand. I've got to remember, this is built on my passion and my love and what I do. And so I really tap into my customer and our reviews and get switched back into my right brain, which is more around my creativity and my gratitude, and it's much more grounded. So I'm very conscious of that. But as an entrepreneur, when you build a business, you have to switch between that left and right brain, but it's really important to be self-reflective. And I'm such a big believer in brand being more about product. It's so much more about product. It is about your mission and your why. And people buy into mission and why. Product's super important, and we've got that now. We have amazing products. But I for me, it's around, why do I do this? And why have we built this amazing community, and how? And it's because we are on a mission to educate people about gut health, nutrition, and well-being. And our community are, you know, they've come along for that journey. So, you know, also, Kate, you do have to create a viable commercial business. So you do have to wear that hat. Otherwise, you don't have a business. But finding that balance and being really self-reflective and honest with yourself about it is really important.
I love that. And it reminds me of Simon Sinek's, like, TED Talk on the power of why.
Yes.
He's incredible.
And I'm, you know, I've always, and that's the power of content, super important. And I think that more and more, as our world is an interesting place, it's a very dynamic place. You know, it's really important that we create brands that have purpose and are cognizant of our environment and human health and well-being, because I think there has to be, and there is happening. And, you know, the more that small businesses like the Beauty Chef and other businesses, you know, do well in an environment with lots of other big businesses, it puts pressure on those big businesses to also change the way they do business and their mission and their why, to be healthier and to be more cognizant of human health and the planet as well.
Yes. And Ari and I always talk about how there's also a huge shift statistically in employees wanting to work for brands that have a mission. Like, having the opportunity to show up every single day and know that you're working for something that's changing the world, not just to create a product that's sitting on a shelf. And you're also a philanthropist. So you're an ambassador for Australian Organic and the Mind Foundation, like you spoke about a little bit earlier. How does philanthropy also play a role in your brand's mission?
So it's something that I guess, you know, helping people is what we do daily at the Beauty Chef, the whole team. And, you know, when we get these incredible reviews from people who say that, you know, our products have changed their life, our books have changed their life, it just brings me so much joy. And so I think we do philanthropy, and giving back is something that's really part and intrinsic to the Beauty Chef. And, you know, in terms of other projects, we look at, you know, we did about 4 years ago a collaboration with the Charles Perkins Centre at Sydney University, and we sponsored a PhD student who was looking at the postbiotic benefits of kombucha. So postbiotics are really interesting because that's the new field, I think, of biotics. And thankfully, naturally fermented foods contain postbiotics, and they're basically these compounds that the live bacteria create when we're fermenting our foods. And postbiotics are anti-inflammatory, they're immune modulating. So all of our products naturally have postbiotics in them. So Sydney University are really interested in looking at the benefits of postbiotics, because some people who are immunocompromised, for example, their practitioner might tell them to stay away from probiotics. So postbiotics are, they're not live bacteria. They're basically these metabolic compounds produced by probiotics, but they have really amazing health benefits. So we helped fund a beautiful PhD student, and she has she's just still doing the work on looking at postbiotics in fermented foods.
Wow, that is fascinating. And something you just talked about really plays up how science is at the core of everything that the Beauty Chef does. And I think it's hard to even look at the beauty industry now without looking at science. You bridge so many areas from science to nutrition to skincare. It really takes this holistic approach to a new level. So because of all of these intersections, we know you work on unique formulas with a team of leading scientists, naturopaths, nutritionists. What did the process of finding this team look like? And do their opinions ever conflict?
Yeah, that's such a, they do actually. But I guess I have found the team really organically over time. So I guess, you know, I've worked with a naturopath who I've worked for like 20 years in media. And so she was one of the first people who really helped me on my formulas to begin with. And we've just found incredible people over time. So a microbiologist, two of the microbiologists I work with, Dr. Belinda Chapman and Dr. Mike Bridges, they, you know, worked with me on a prototype for a fermentation plant about 7 years ago. So we built that plant. So we built a state-of-the-art biofermentation plant in Sydney, where we now make all of our formulas, which is super exciting. And I met Mike probably about 8 years ago at a manufacturing plant, and he was telling me all about his background as a scientist. And then we met again about a year later, and I proposed an idea of, let's find a manufacturing partner and build a fermentation plant. I mean, this is where, Kate, you know, I look back and I go, what was I thinking? Because there's been a lot of blood, sweat and tears put into that project. It's been huge. But to have the control over the quality of our products and over the fermentation process and the probiotic and postbiotic outputs that we get to really optimize our formulas is super exciting. And no one has done that. And we're really unique in that way. So they're microbiologists that we work with really closely. And of course, through philanthropy with, you know, Dr. Andrew Holmes and Professor Felice Jacker at the Food and Mood Center, we've done lovely projects with them as well. And naturopaths and nutritionists. So we have just, you know, in terms of employees, so we have, you know, the MPD formulator that I work with really closely, she's a certified nutritionist. And then we have a couple of gorgeous naturopaths that also work for the business. So we're a really solid team. And yes, not everybody agrees on, you know, scientists and naturopaths don't necessarily agree on everything. But the one thing that they do agree on is that for your gut microbiome, the most important important, the single most important factor is diet.
Right. And beauty is such a dynamic industry where there's so many new research studies that are being done and new information that's being unveiled to us at all times. And going along with that theme of how much has changed across this industry, you were the first of ingestible beauty and this glow from within mentality. So I know you mentioned that when you were dealing with manufacturers, you had to negotiate. You had to convince them to believe in your mission as much as you did. So whether you're pitching to investors or trying to hire your first employee, like, negotiation is everywhere in business. So what are your tips for negotiation? I feel like, especially as women, there's kind of like this fine line between being seen as forceful and aggressive versus like being passive. And even you mentioned like you're so determined and you're so pointed in your goals, but you're also such a kind person. So how do we balance that and how do we approach negotiation?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Kate, because I guess I'm not a person, you know, historically that loves confrontation. And I am by nature a gentle person, and kindness to me is really, really important. And I always find it interesting. I think sometimes if you're gentle and kind, then people think that you're going to be a pushover. And that is disappointing in business because, and if you don't talk the hard talk, then they might not take you seriously because they look at you and go, oh, she's just this nice, you know, pushover. And so I think sometimes people have underestimated me in terms of my tenacity and my determination. So while, and I have learned as well to have a boss voice. And it's like, you know, being a parent, I've had to learn to have, you know, my kids are in their 20s now, so I don't really ever use it. But when they were growing up, I had to find my parent voice. And that wasn't easy for me because being really stern doesn't come to me naturally. But I've had to learn it. And also, you know, just talking to people more firmly about situations that may arise, or when I feel like I'm dealing with manufacturers who are being unreasonable, I found my voice to fairly but firmly speak my mind. And it does often get better results than when you're, you know, from the past where I've been very super gentle in my approach. And so I really approach my business and my dealings and partnerships with kindness and gentleness always. But when I have to be firm, I have learned how to be firm, and it's actually really important. And that doesn't mean you're being unfair. It doesn't mean you're being, I don't like aggression. It just means that holding people to account is actually really important, and people need boundaries and barriers, and you also need to set them for people. And I also think I remember someone saying to me once, I think I did a course on parenting, and part of it was because I was so soft and gentle with my kids. And, you know, when they were mucking up, I went to this talk, and this, I think it was run by a psychologist, and she said, you need to create a really strong fence for your children, a really strong boundary, so like a vine, they can grow up it. And it's very true. People need boundaries, and that's how people learn, and people are clearer about what they need to do when you give them. And I see it with employees. When you make them accountable and responsible and you set those boundaries, I truly believe they thrive more. And you do it, it's done in a very kind and considered and collaborative way, but those boundaries are really important in life and in business.
I love that. And I feel like I relate to that even as an intern in companies. Mm. The bosses that I've had that were kind of just like, oh, like hands off, laissez-faire. Like, I was always like, what am I doing? I feel like I don't have a purpose here. And then the bosses that were like, please do this, please do this, please do this. Or like, even like you're saying, in a gentle way, in a very like mission rooted way, saying like, this needs to be done, this, like deadlines. Like, I always was like, okay, yes, now I have a purpose. Now I have like something to work towards. And that was always like exciting to me.
Yeah, definitely. And as a boss as well, in terms of ego, I have had to let that go a little bit from having a really small business where everyone's like, oh, Carla's so nice and she's so kind and I'd be able to have lunch with them every single day, to getting being a bigger business where I'm spread really thinly and I can't have lunch with everybody every day. And sometimes I think that growth has been difficult, but just going as we grow, I can't be, you know, I can't see everybody every day, have lunch with them and relate with them like I used to. And I'm very honest about that with the team. I would love to do that, but I just don't have the time. And I really need you guys to take on more responsibilities, because I am spread more thinly, and some people really rise up with that and some people don't like it so much because they want to have it like it used to be when we were smaller. And, you know, so I think being also a boss is that you sometimes are creating those barriers and boundaries, you're not going to be popular. And I find that hard, Kate, because I want everyone to be really happy and I want to be liked by everybody. And, you know, but I also go for the greater good and also for the good of individuals. Sometimes they're not going to be happy with me, but I'm trying to look at the big picture.
I would love to hear about what it's like growing a business in Australia. So you're from Bondi Beach. Yes. You started the Beauty Chef in Bondi Beach and you grew it there. And I'm curious to hear if you think it differs from the US, what it's like entrepreneurially in that landscape.
You know, Kate, you were talking about opportunity before, and I am so grateful that I've had the opportunity to grow a business. And I know in so many places in the world and so many different people in the world don't have that opportunity. So we are so lucky to live in a country that you have opportunity to be an entrepreneur and grow a business. And, you know, I think we live in a country that is incredibly entrepreneurial. And, you know, I think, you know, people talk about Instagram, and I think there's definitely negatives to Instagram, and we're all on it way too much. And people compare themselves with other people, and I think all of that stuff is really, really unhealthy. And, you know, we need to talk more about that stuff and being disciplined about the way that we use and analyze social media. But I do love the fact I see so many young people starting businesses, and they don't need an investment of $1 million. They can start in their own home and they can start on social media. And I see my daughter and her friends starting businesses, and I love it. I'm just like, this is, you know, you can be super creative and clever, and you have to be hardworking. I'm a big believer, and that's what I say to people, like, if you're going to start a business, be passionate about it. Because business is often, and success is often, you know, 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. And people look at the hours that I work, and I really try and find balance. I'm very good with my diet and moving my body and exercise, but I do work a lot. And that is something that I'm always trying to balance. I think that it comes with running a business, but I love what I do. And so for me, the stress of hard work, it's not so much stress the work side, because I love what I do. And so I always say to my, you know, daughter and her friends, I'm like, I'm so encouraging, but I'm like, you know, you have to put in the work as well. Because people often think, oh, you work, you know, you live in Bondi Beach and you must just go to the beach every day and hang out on the beach and then come home and do a bit of work. And I'm really disciplined. I will go down to the beach. I'll have a swim. I'll go for a run. But then I come home and I do a lot of work. And so I'm not at the beach all day. And like people think, you just say, no, I'm not at the beach all day. I do go to the beach. I love the beach. And for me, it's really important in terms of balance and all the amazing negative ions that seawater give off. And I think it's so healthy for your mind and your body to be near the ocean and be submerged in salt water. And just that air is so good for you. But yeah, so, I mean, you know, I think in Australia there is a real support of entrepreneurs, and I think I can see this wave of young people doing such incredible, exciting things. And even being my daughter and my son, you know, they also have got their own kind of little businesses happening and their friends. And I love watching it. It's really exciting.
Oh, it sounds amazing. And Ari's actually moving to Australia next year. So I'm like, maybe I should move too.
I think you should, Kate. It's so beautiful here. It's an amazing.
It looks amazing.
Yeah, it really is. We're very lucky.
So for all of our listeners, in case you're new here, our episodes will always start and end the same. And just like you already heard us talk about Carla's roots at the beginning of this episode, we'll end by talking about guest experiences during the most influential and outright crazy time in their lives, their 20s. And since our listenership is primarily college students and those in their early careers, we want to center this last segment on them. And because those years tend to fly by, this is also more of a speed round with questions. Carla, are you ready?
I'm ready.
If you were to be face-to-face with Carla in her 20s, what does she need to know?
To believe in yourself and don't sweat the small stuff.
If you had to pick one ingredient for a healthy glow, what is it?
Fermented foods.
Matcha or coffee?
Matcha, definitely.
What is your favorite recipe in the Beauty Chef cookbook?
Oh, that is such a hard one. My buckwheat banana loaf or bread or cake, I make it all the time.
That sounds amazing. What is a staple food, pantry item, or grocery item in your house that people need to know about?
Besides fermented foods, I would say cooking with ghee, which is clarified butter, and it's a great, it doesn't oxidize at high temperatures. And it's delicious and great for your gut health.
Apart from the new launch of Clarify, which we're so excited about, what's next for the Beauty Chef?
Oh, so much, Kate. We have a very exciting launch of a topical product next week, which is all about looking after the skin microbiome, super active and nourishing the skin. And then we've got a big launch of ingestibles in August, which I'm super excited about, which is very different from the current range. And also next year going into more skincare and focused on the skin microbiome, which does actually work synergistically with your gut microbiome.
That's incredible. I'm so excited to use it. Say we're coming to Bondi Beach for the day. What cafe do we go to? What spot do we have to see? Any workout class you love?
So I love Balance Moves, which is a Pilates studio that I go to. There's also the Well on Campbell Parade, which has great Pilates and yoga classes and meditation classes. In terms of cafes, my favorite cafe is Lock, Stock and Barrel. They make their own like nut milks. They make their own kombucha. They make their own locks. They do the most delicious salads ever. So it's my favorite cafe. Sean's Panorama is incredible, which is on Campbell Parade. And Sean and his partner, they have a farm. And so everything, it's like farm to table eating. And it is just incredible. Their little restaurants, absolutely amazing. So they would be they're my two favorite restaurants. And of course, Icebergs, which is super expensive. So you need to save your money if you want to go to that restaurant, because I have to save to go to that restaurant. And it's very juicy, but it's got the most incredible views of Bondi Beach. And to sit there and to have a cocktail or kombucha and some fresh oysters and sashimi is just incredible.
Wow, I am booking a flight tomorrow. That sounds like a dream. We always end with a final question called the Greenish Goal. What is one goal you recommend our listeners set, from mental health to physical health to founding a company to mastering their wealth?
I would say to look after your gut, be gutsy, and follow your gut instinct.
I love that. This has been such a lovely conversation, and I've loved getting to know you. Thank you so much, Carla.
Thank you, Kate. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've, really enjoyed it. And when you come to Australia, you have to connect with me and I will take you to all the amazing places in Bondi.
I definitely will. This has been such a pleasure.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode. You can find anything we mentioned today linked in our show notes.
And if you want more, make sure to go to our website at www.agreenishlife.com.
And don't forget, we release new episodes every other Friday. We'll see you next time on Greenish.